You sure we can do it better than C2E2 does?
They had a professional like system, so they were very good about it. But
who was the one doing the sound check?
They were going through it real fast.
Ah.
Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that's not really sure who I'm going to vote for. Probably you. Probably the acehole. I am your host, Stephen the Bean, with my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared, are you the acehole?
I sure hope not. Your voice sounds different today.
It's tired.
It is tired.
I sang.
Yeah, Stephen, why is your voice tired?
Because I sang in the C2E2 talent show yesterday.
Yeah, you did. And it was awesome, and you should have won. I demand that we stop the count.
Stop. No, the person who won, fantastic. I was very satisfied that she won.
What did you sing first?
I sang City Escape from Sonic Adventure 2.
So have you ever heard anybody go, rolling around at the speed of sound?
That's that song. Yeah. I don't know. Watching back, I wasn't super thrilled with the performance. It was fine.
I think you did a great job. Thanks. I'm biased.
You are biased.
I'm biased, but I'm not wrong. I will say, I told the people we were there with, even before the talent show started, I was like, Steven's going to have a really hard time winning this because it is not just a singing competition. It's a talent show, which means somebody with a like really cool niche talent that they're very good at is probably going to win. And lo and behold, that's what happened.
And I think part of the problem was, if I would have known who the judges were prior to me submitting my talent, I may have played it a little different.
What do you mean?
All three were professional cosplayers.
Oh, that's bullshit.
No, I mean, it's their niche, but
well, fair enough.
A little bit of diversity in that would have been nice.
Yeah, because the person who won played electric violin.
It was awesome.
And they dressed as 2B and played a song from one of the boss fights in Nier Automata that was playing on the screen behind them, and that was really cool.
It was really cool.
That one was really cool. I was like, that's the winner.
Yeah.
You were definitely in like the top like three or four people, I think.
All right. Can we talk about the person doing the giant ring?
That was cool as hell.
It was pretty cool.
I don't remember what it's called. It's Alira is the one that hangs from the ceiling, but it's basically a giant ring. They were dressed as Shadow the Hedgehog as well, so it's like they have a ring like in Sonic, which is great.
It's pretty great.
It's this giant like metal ring that you have that thing must weigh a lot.
Yeah.
That you can like grab onto and like stand in and spin around inside of and do tricks with, and it was dope.
It was super cool. He also went right after me, and I was like, huh, putting the Sonic ones right next to each other, huh?
Yeah, it was interesting. And doing two Defying Gravities was a bad choice.
That I cannot blame either of the people who did it.
No.
I can blame whoever decided to manage that.
Yeah, to book two of the same song in the day out show.
That is a choice.
But C2E2 was fun, at least the first day of it.
Yeah. I'm glad you had fun.
I did.
Okay, good.
I had more fun than last year. I didn't. Not that I didn't have fun last year. It's just, I think having that long talent show in there and then going to an event instead of a panel made it more fun for me than last year.
Good.
Last year, I think, was also a little overwhelming.
Sure.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. And your first time, you're just like, there's so much. What do I even do?
I spent too much like straight time on the, well, by time on the on the show floor.
Nice.
But yeah, like four straight hours, five straight hours last year. That was too much.
That is too much. It's a great place if you're going to spend money, but
and I did.
And you did. But if you're looking for more content and time filler stuff, upstairs, where you want to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had really great Korean barbecue afterwards.
It was really good.
It was so good. I took an edible last night and just ate some of it from the takeout container with my hands.
Ow.
Which maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe I should have just let that one die with me.
The world would have never known.
Too bad.
Too bad. Here we are.
Is there anything in particular you're looking forward to the next 2 days? I'm not going, so.
There's the, like, big dance party at the end of tonight's I'm sure I bookmarked like a ton of events that are going on today.
Nerd I just, orgy. Nerd orgy.
That's not what that is. Well, no, because it's in the convention center.
Yeah.
There was, however, an after party that was not at the convention center last night that popped up on my like Instagram feed, so it must have been a targeted ad after they knew I was going to see 2E2.
Sure.
And it was called Sexy Nerds. And I don't know what this was going to be.
Yeah, you didn't go.
I didn't go because we went to Korean barbecue. And like after singing, I'm usually pretty wiped. So yeah,
that makes sense.
I didn't rally.
You put your whole ass in that performance.
Oh, my God. And it's a lot of ass to put in that performance.
And Chinatown is like a mile and a half walk from the convention center. So you had to walk it back to go back to the party.
And my feet were already tired.
Dude, I know I'm getting old because my knees like are on fire.
Well, you gotta kind of play it with, you want your walking shoes, but you also want shoes that look good with your whatever cosplay you're wearing.
No, I just wore walking shoes.
Yeah, I did not. So my feet were pretty beat at the end of the day.
I do want to shame, I think it's McCormick, not C2E2, but who's to say? The food selections there are dog shit.
And they haven't changed it in years.
No.
It's the same food.
Yep.
And I'm sure people get like complain all the time, but because it's in McCormick Place, McCormick Place supplies the food, and all the vendors are the same like four items, and they're all stupid expensive.
Yep, it's all grill, and not even like good grill food. I mean, I wish I would have gotten the Polish, like the Polish dog, because actually, like, I know a Polish dog is gonna be good. I've been leaving bars late enough where like people just set up a grill outside of them and just make Polish dogs for people. You gotta buy them, obviously, but those do hit real good. But everything else is kind of a scam. Maybe Connie's pizza was fine. I don't know. I didn't know because the person in front of me got the last slice and then I gave up and went and got a really overpriced pastrami sandwich.
Yeah, how do you run out of pizza? And it wasn't even the busy day. It was the kind of not super busy day. Sunday's the quiet day.
I hope that they meant that they needed to cook more.
I think that's the case. And with how this layout, we're going into very big details on this convention. With how it's laid out, there are these two islands in like a floor up, but not...
They're towers almost.
Yeah, they're like overlooking the whole convention floor, which is cool. But then that means there are these islands and someone has to deliver the food to these islands when they run out.
Yeah.
So I imagine it goes from whatever basement kitchen.
There could be kitchens in the base of the tower.
Could be. Yeah. I don't know.
But get better food.
Yeah. Speaking of better food, emails.
We eating good.
If you want to email us, feel free to do so, survivortbt@gmail.com, or you can message us on Reddit, @survivortbt, or on Patreon. Get out of here, X.
Get out of here.
We're sick of you. I went back to like, it's been a while. It's been like 6 months since I've said that.
Yeah, something deep inside of you unlocked like a sleeper agent.
Oh, yes, I must go to the X. Anyway, Patreon, you want to follow us for free? Talk to us, do that. Anyway, we have a few emails. First up from Carl. Carl's Gabon episode 4 email. Picture the episode. Bob celebrating.
Oh, yeah. Bob hump in the air.
Him celebrating the spice garden.
Yeah, he's the only one that's happy about it.
Ah, yeah. This is amazing.
What a weird guy.
I love him. Notes. I can't help but appreciate GC's storyline. Half-heartedly offers to be the leader, fails comically, quits after a day, and paddles away in a kayak. Although apparently he had just left to catch some fish.
I think he left to be alone, but it's
probably the answer.
Just timed really badly.
I'm also glad he left when he did, but he's a small part of what makes Gabon, Gabon.
And that is the problem.
Second favorite part of the pick of the episode scene, the audible... Oh, of disappointment when the curtain falls. People not that excited.
You got us plants in the jungle.
Did you notice the remix of the Survivor Africa intro chant that was used for a scene transition?
No.
I don't think I did, but I... Maybe I caught something like that, but I'm going to give myself credit and say no.
The music this season is really good.
Yeah.
It's interesting that this season is the first season I can think of that is let down almost exclusively by its cast. Like, it's not like Fiji where they gave them this terrible twist that ruined the first half of the game, or like Thailand where, yes, the cast let them down, but also they put one camp in this really nice area that they were living large and one camp on the Suffer Island. This is just... on a technical level, on a game level, you could complain maybe the challenges are a little too physical, but there's very little nitpick from production here. They just did a bad job with casting.
Right. Also, eat your rice.
Also, eat your rice.
Eat your rice. We did last night. It was delicious. Anyway, moving on to Tyler. Tyler says, Suri listed Aris as the player she respected most on her Heroes versus Villains profile.
That makes sense.
The two Survivor Micronesia players that did not attend the 10-year anniversary party are Joel and Jason.
Okay.
That actually does not surprise me. Those are the two that I feel like would be like, eh, I'm staying away.
Jason kind of surprises me because he's such a fan, but Joel that's makes fair. Sense.
But he also lived in, like, the Virgin Islands, so...
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's quite a hike.
The seven people on Survivor Gabon who applied to be on the show are Ace, Crystal, GC, Jillian, Jackie, Ken, Randy, and Susie. Everyone else... was recruited.
Okay.
Jillian and Randy both applied 15 times before being
Jesus
chosen.
Jesus Christ.
Wow.
I mean, good for them, like, perseverance. It's also interesting that they're two of the more fun characters on the season. Obviously, Jillian doesn't last very long, but right. she's entertaining, and it still took them that long.
Yay. Looking forward to the next episode. Cool. Moving on to Josh. Josh says, since one of your listeners suggested watching Australian Survivor on the Patreon wheel, wasn't on the Patreon wheel, it was Patreon adjacent, like a something for the Patreon, and we're talking, we're figuring out how what we can do here.
Yeah, it only goes on the wheel if it's from the Patreon area of France. Otherwise, it's just a sparkling suggestion.
I cannot believe you. I thought I would issue a quick spoiler warning that the following seasons contain U.S. players competing with the Australian ones. Australian Survivor Champions versus Contenders, Australian Survivor Blood versus Water, Australian Survivor Heroes versus Villains, and Australian Survivor versus The World.
Well, that one makes sense.
Scott Pilgrim versus The World versus Survivor.
The World.
The particular wording slash rules regarding survivor advantages are not really well defined. There's one future incident in a way later season where I think they realize the particular wording that is used in the rules for the advantage is very important.
Okay.
We're figuring out. It's kind of loosey-goosey, and then you're like, oh, wait, no, this is important.
They need somebody from, like, the Magic the Gathering rules team to come in, or like Wizards of the Coast, legitimately, to like look at their rules, because I, as much as shit as I can give Wizards for all the fuckery they do, and which is honestly mostly Hasbro, they write rules like nobody else. Mm. Like, it, word choice is so specific.
Do they just hire lawyers to do it?
Honestly, maybe. Mm. Yeah, probably.
I work with a lawyer, and it does baffle my mind sometimes when I'm like, that word, the word choice, it's all very specific, and I'm glad I have you to overlook what is going on here.
Yeah, they're very careful with their mays and musts, mm-hmm. Or the order of things, or it's great.
Correct. A lot of the voting confessionals for Kelly call her rich slash spoiled, so I do think there is some element of her apparently wealthy background.
That makes sense.
Which made her unable to connect with others. Yeah.
Sure.
That and... she did seem like a wet noodle sometimes.
Yeah, she seemed like she regretted being on the show pretty quickly.
I feel like a lot of people regret that sometimes.
This season, yeah.
Yeah. Moving on to Carl's episode 5 plus basketball talk.
Oh.
Carl says, okay, so analytics have changed basketball for sure, but people who call it a solved game, Jared, are, in my opinion, either greatly oversimplifying or just plain don't watch basketball.
I mean, to be clear, I don't watch basketball.
Also, Jared.
I think I said in there that this is just like what I've heard from people that do talk about it a lot. And I'm like, that's interesting.
Guys shoot more threes, yes, but offenses are more complicated than just dudes passing and dribbling until they jack a three. That is a choice of wording that I appreciate.
I'm pretty much through all of BattleBots. Like, I have, like, 5 episodes left of the last season that they've made so far.
I would say BattleBots is a solved game.
strongly disagree. There is a heavy meta, but actually the winner of the most recent world championship broke that meta.
Okay.
They're also, I don't care if it's salt. I want to see robots blow up.
I want to explode the robots.
But anyway, the trophy is called the Giant Nut. So it's become a bit of a joke with me and my friend who watches it that you have to do blank for the Giant Nut. You got to jack those threes for the Giant Nut.
I'm so sorry. There's pick and roll. There's pick and pop. There's down screens. There's floppy action. Are you making these up? There's horns action. There's a lot of strategies that teams will use to optimize their offense.
None of that is real.
And there are also more dunks now than ever before. And it's not like threes are all teams do. There's a lot of skill on display out there. And you know what? I haven't played basketball in a long time, so I legitimately... I'm not a good person to critique this either.
That's fair. And I think what you point out there is the solvedness of a game has to do more with the analytics side of it and how that is changing most sports.
Yes.
I think it's changing football for the better. I think that it's actually unsolving things people thought were solved. Like, oh, you just always punt on fourth down. It's like, well, you can go for it way more, actually.
That's so fascinating because I feel like that is pushing it. Okay. I feel like we could do this solved versus unsolved conversation every time we talk about sports, but I don't want to.
Fair. No, but thank you for the context there.
That's not to say there aren't big problems with the NBA as it is currently, because there's definitely are, and some games do turn into three-point contests, especially in the regular season. So how the NBA isn't everyone's thing, but solved game, them's fighting words. Picture the episode. It's Randy eating aggressively toward you.
I'm souring on Randy a little bit, to be
honest.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
What makes you say that?
That scene plus this episode.
Survivor notes. I was one of the people who was on Survivor Sucks, and saw that the eat your rice meme a million times. So much that that's how I remember that scene. And wrote it that way. I didn't read it that way, but wrote it that way in my last email to you. Michael's totally right to point that out. Way to go, Michael. Corinne has said that killing the turtle was pretty gruesome. Apparently, you have to cut it out from its shell while it's still alive, then crush its shell, then dice and cook. Glad they didn't show that.
Oh my god.
Of some of the gross things that they've shown on Survivor... appreciate they didn't do that one.
Yeah, that one would be time-consuming, too.
It would. And I don't think the audience would react too well.
No.
Because people look at turtles as like a gentle giant.
Yeah, they're in that only in an emergency type of food for Western audiences.
Apparently, Ace has an AA tattoo. I think it's on his neck.
Oh, okay. Good for him.
Good for him. Cracked me up that Jared called Ace British-esque.
That's what he is.
He's British adjacent.
He's vaguely British.
Things I liked. Ace turning into David Attenborough when the elephant enters his confessional.
Yeah.
That's good. Crystal saying, "We all get depressed. Mine just comes out through my eyes." I do like that.
Yeah.
That's a nice line. Kelly. I actually appreciated Kelly for the inarticulate doofus she was. Like a tribal when she eloquently explains, "I never said she was weak. But when someone cries, it's like, why are you crying? Clearly something's like, you're just not stable."
What? I know. I know that's what she said. And I remember that. But even now, just hearing it read back again. What?
It's pretty wild.
It's I'm not enjoying the season as much as I did in the beginning. I will be totally honest. And part of that is, yes, there is comedy in this clown car of a fucking season. But, like, and, like, there's the GCs and the Kellys. Like, they're entertaining, but I don't want them all on the same season, nor on the same tribe. You want one to two of those people per tribe, maybe. And they ended up getting most of them on one tribe.
And now most of them are gone.
Yeah.
So, it changes how we look forward.
There's, like, five or six competent contestants. Because even on Coda, like... we have Dan and Susie.
That's fair. I get it.
Yeah.
Both of which were originally on Fong. So
I know, right?
That's wild. Oh, crazy to think about. Also the scene where Crystal emphasizes multiple times that crying is not a sign of weakness. Cut to Kelly saying, I definitely saw her crying as a sign of weakness. LMAO, I don't quite stand, but I do enjoy her.
Yeah.
Nice. That's all our emails. I don't believe we have any Reddits, but I'm gonna check just in case. Oh, we do have one Reddit post. To answer your question, this is from Bro My God. To answer your question, yes, that was CT punching Adam, who he was paired up with in Rivals. The video quality is shit, and that episode was removed from all streaming services because of the fight. It was at that point you can see all of production, and it took several people to stop him, and apparently went on significantly longer than it showed.
That's the guy we want back for our next season.
That's the guy. That's the guy.
His contract must have been insane. Of like, if you step out of line at all, prison.
But not just American prison.
Costa Rican prison.
Costa Rican prison. Yeah. Okay, and that's it. That's all we got. Bumper.
All right, so this episode came out on November 6th of 2008. There were 2 weeks between episodes this time, and a good amount happened, so let's get into it. Iceland receives $1.3 billion bailout package from the IMF, first European country to acquire an emergency loan, so economy still falling, can't relate at all.
Huh.
In a bloody Friday, many of the world's stock exchanges experienced the worst decline in history, with drops around 10% or more in most cases. Again, can't relate.
Never heard of it.
Something I'm definitely afraid of as a brand new homeowner. In the UK, 500,000 mortgage holders are left in negative equity after house prices dropped 15% in the previous summer.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like, to be clear, I'm a YIMBY, build more housing, please. There should be enough for everybody. But the economy crashing so hard so quickly that my house is worth less than the mortgage I took out is something I am actually afraid of.
I mean, at that point, you're just paying rent. So, I don't know. Not the worst thing in the world for me, but I get it. Yeah. That sucks.
This is just kind of interesting. 10th century Archimedes pamphlet featuring lost works of Archimedes made freely available on the web 10 years after bought by unknown tech figure. So some science and history stuff. That's cool. Delta Airlines merges with Northwest Airlines, creating the world's largest airline and reducing the number of U.S. legacy carriers to 5.
Mm.
Basically a monopoly. The white paper on Bitcoin was published. Described a decentralized peer-to-peer network that could track and verify transactions while producing a transparent, verifiable record. And there's no problems with the way that was set up at all.
No. Definitely not used to do a lot of dark money and awful, shady things.
Yeah. Barack Obama was elected.
Yay.
We're now in the Obama era. And then the number one song moved back to Whatever You Like by T.I.
Can do whatever you like.
Sure. Yeah. I guess.
You can do whatever you like.
That's not what that song is, right?
I don't think that's what it is.
Okay. I'm running out of musicals and plays that are recognizable on this, so I'm just going to wrap it up. Passing Strange. Have you heard of Passing Strange?
I have heard of Passing Strange. I've seen Passing Strange.
Oh, really?
It's written by Donald Faison, Zach Braff, one of the two Scrubs guys.
Okay, maybe both of them. Shrek the Musical.
Love it.
2008. There's South Pacific Revival. There's a lot of revivals. The Little Mermaid. That's pretty much it. I'm going to do that once a season instead of every week is what I've decided.
Okay.
The top five movies are, we're in talk number 5. Number 4, Saw 5. That's confusing. Number 3, and the one I really want to talk about, but maybe we'll next week, High School Musical 3. Number 2, Changeling. And number 1, Zach and Miri Make a Porno. But number 5, and the one we'll talk about this week, The Secret Life of Bees.
Don't know what this is. Is this
Steven, what do you think Secret Life of Bees is about?
Is this like a David Attenborough documentary?
Yeah, it's exactly that. Here, let me read it off.
Yay.
Haunted by memories of her late mother and abused by her father, Paul Bettany, Paul Bettany's the actor there, 14-year-old Lily Owens, Dakota Fanning, runs away with her friend and caregiver Rosaline, Jennifer Hudson, to the South Carolina town that holds the key to her mother's past. There, Lily meets the Boatwright sisters, Queen Latifah, Alicia Keys, Sophie Okonedo, who take her in and teach her about beekeeping, honey, and the Black Madonna. Lily also discovers that the truth about her mother is closer than she thinks.
So very much a documentary.
Yeah, a nature documentary. What do you think this rate on Rotten Tomatoes, Steven?
I I know I've kind of lived around this world for a while, but I'm going to stick with it. I think it's going to be 64 critic score, audience score less of 57.
You're close, except the audience score is a little higher. So it's critic of 60, audience of 78.
All right.
It's acceptable. With the consensus being, The Secret Life of Bees has moments of charm, but is largely too maudlin and sticky sweet. They went with the honey joke there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. That's it.
That's it.
Busy couple weeks in 2008.
I think I was wrong. I couldn't find who wrote Passing Straight into the Musical, so I'll redact my Scrubs comment.
Okay. Yeah. I'm editing this one, and I will not remove it.
All right. Well, no, I'm just saying, don't remove it. I'm just saying to the people, I was wrong. We all need to admit we're wrong sometimes.
Honestly, I love being wrong. Clearly, we do this podcast. But, like, and not about, like, I don't want to be wrong about, like, core beliefs where I'm like, oh, God, I was. But, hey, being told that you're wrong and learning that you're wrong is better than just continuing to be wrong, because I feel like there's something in the back of your brain that knows it, and you're lying to yourself. So I'd rather just know that I'm wrong.
Sure.
And admit it.
Well, that's good, because do you remember what you said about Ace last episode?
No.
That there was no way he was going home next episode?
Oh, did I say that there's no way he's going home, which means he's definitely going home?
Exactly.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
So here it is.
I didn't expect Sugar to flip. But I also just know that Sugar's going to do whatever.
Sugar's a wild card, baby.
She is a fucking wild card. She's not dumb, but she's a wild card.
No, she's very much a wild card, though. So moving on to the episode 6, It All Depends on the Pinup Girl.
Sure.
I love this title.
It's a good one.
Oh, we're all pinning our hopes on Sugar.
It does kind of give away that, like, Sugar's the swing vote, though.
Yes. I guess you could talk about it as, like, you could look at the reward challenge as that and how poorly she did.
Yeah.
Because that definitely hinged
on
her.
No, but, like, before I even turn on the episode, I was like, oh, okay, so Sugar's the one who's going to decide who goes home this episode.
Sure. Okay. So we start at Fong, and they're counting their rice. They have 30 handfuls of rice, which they later determined was like 9 days of rice.
I think 7. Or wait, no, 9 at the beginning, 7 yes. by tribal. Yeah,
correct. And Maddie's talking about how hopeless he is right now. This tribe is hopeless. I feel hopeless. It's pretty rough.
Honestly, this is part of my problem with the season, and it's not something Survivor can or should change. It just is what it is, but like, this is bleak.
It's pretty bleak.
It's hard to watch this tribe just get, like, every episode is the same episode after the tribe swap. It's just, they continue to crumble at camp. The other tribe is living large. They win rewards. We see them all be happy. We come back to Fong. Everything sucks. They get to the challenge. They either get ass blasted or they snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. The tribe devolves until one person just desperately needs to go home. And then we do it again next episode. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the worst parts of early Survivor, where these people are just starving and miserable. But to compound that with the other people are doing so well.
Yeah.
And it creates this huge divide on top of a lot of these challenges are super physical.
They did haves and have-nots like Fiji again, but by accident.
Yeah.
The producers did not set it up to be this.
We didn't intend for this to get this way. We even tried to fix it, but we couldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
We let them try to fix it, and they said no.
Yeah. I also want to shame Paramount Plus real quick. It's that time of the season, baby. Once a season, every season, something goes wrong. The commercial breaks for this episode were put in the weirdest fucking spot that I'm actually a little nervous that maybe Paramount increased the number of ads they have and it's fucking with the episodes.
Oh.
Now, I did not see anything online that said that. And this episode is edited super weird in its flow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they do a tribal and then they have more stuff and then they do a tribal that I think could have thrown off, you know, if they have a regular formula. They probably have, like, inserted, this is where the ad breaks in Survivor are. But it made it so I was getting ad breaks in the middle of challenges or in the middle of Jeff describing challenges. Like, I got my first ad break, or one of the first ones, in the middle of Jeff describing the rules for the reward challenge.
That's not good.
No. It made it difficult to watch.
I'm hoping that's a one-off and not a consistent thing.
Me too.
Because that is very frustrating.
I think because of the format of the episode, it screwed up where the general placeholders are for Survivor commercials, but it was annoying as fuck.
I feel like I've seen that one or two times before, but I also don't have ads anymore, so yeah. I don't know.
This happens all the time. We're watching every episode together here with your Paramount that doesn't have ads.
Yeah.
Anyway, into the episode.
Anyway, into the episode. After we're feeling hopeless, Crystal knocks over the rice. On accident, of course.
Yeah, of course.
And people are rightfully, like, upset about it, but you pick up the rice, you put it back, try to clean it off.
Crystal crashes out this whole episode. Like, she is spiraling really hard this episode, and she accuses Ace and Maddie of, like, acting shitty or like it's on your face, and I didn't read that on their face at all. I read it as like concern and like maybe a little bit of frustration that mm-hmm. but like that it happened, not like they're not like, oh, this idiot again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like oh what are we gonna do?
It's really tough because she clearly feels like she's on the outs and these people don't like her anymore, so she's kind of self-fulfilling by accidentally knocking over that.
Yeah,
so I get the crash out, but you're right. She lashes out because of these internal feelings.
A lot of people that need more humility and will, like, and they're one of their, I shouldn't say first instincts, because Crystal's been through a lot this game,
mm-hmm.
but is to take their ball and go home. And that does not make for a good Survivor contestant to be on the show or to watch.
And to remind you, Crystal is an Olympic athlete. She's had a lot of success in her career.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
So
she's probably never lost this much ever.
Ever. No. Once you get to, like, the Diamond League stuff, I'm sure you struggle to reach the pinnacle of whatever you're doing. But growing up in high school, college, you probably dominated a lot.
Oh, 100%.
And so then they make rice. After they kind of have their weird argument about it. Oh, I have to note, Maddie says, you know what? It's crying over spilled milk.
I had literally written down before that, don't cry over spilled rice.
Spilled rice, say. But he does say, I want to flip out at her, but it's pointless. So maybe there's something to what Crystal's saying, that like the feeling is there, the emotion is there, they're just not saying it.
Which is also, I don't know, like, maybe you're right.
Do you really think Maddie is the kind of person who is going to do a good job of hiding what's in his brain on his face?
No, especially not at this point in the show. No. Where they're all slowly withering away. And that really is the crux at it, is that, like, these are just, like, starved, malnourished people. And mm-hmm. it's really hard to regulate your emotions when you are this deprived of everything.
Yeah.
But I thought they handled it really well. Even if inside they were frustrated and even a little bit on their face, I thought they handled it really well.
Okay. All that being said, I think Crystal is justified in saying those things at that point.
That's fair.
However, they go and they make rice, and Crystal refuses to eat and says, no, I screwed up. You guys eat. And everyone's begging her, like, no, it doesn't do us any good for you to go hungry. Eat some rice. And
eat your rice. I guess it's just like, Crystal, you did fuck up and they're allowed to be a little mad at you as long as they're not like lashing out at you or being dicks about it, which they aren't. So like, you just have to take this L, and you instead are making it like, how dare you be mad at me.
Mm-hmm. It's the mixed messaging of Crystal saying, I don't want to feel like I'm taking away from anybody on the tribe, and by all means, eat your full like you normally do. Like, okay, you're trying to be generous, but also you're trying to take stabs at them.
Yeah.
Like, it's all messy. And Ken is seeing this and he's upset. Like, Ace and Maddie are calling the shots, and I don't want that to be the case. I don't want them to just run this game.
Ken is actually probably pretty good at Survivor.
Ooh.
I don't know. Like, he's done well at the one mental challenge we saw. He did good enough, like, at the challenges in this episode, or at least the reward challenge, because the other one's not really a team challenge, that he's not a liability early on. And, like, he has a good strategic head on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
He's been kind of running the Fong game, but he's playing chess with, like, seven pawns. And the other side is all queens.
Fair. Yeah. And Ace kind of tags this scene with the, hey, Crystal did me a favor here, blowing up like that. Yeah. She's next to go.
Well.
Oh, how the turntables. At CODA, Dan is talking to Charlie, Corinne, and Marcus, and they quote-unquote seem tight. It says, Charlie, Corinne, and Marcus seem tight.
Yeah.
I realize now what my note says. So he wants to show him a little bit of who he is.
Guys, can you include me, please?
I'm a really sensitive person, and it's weird not to be part of a group.
Yeah.
I want to be part of the group.
Dan, you're trying too hard.
I get what he's saying, in that he is probably a very popular person and hasn't dealt with this kind of rejection.
And he's a massive people pleaser.
Yeah. So now to be on the outs is destroying him.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan's so weird. I wish we would have gotten more of him. Because he's such a weird dude. And it's rare to see somebody's paranoia alone. Like, only their paranoia get them sent home. It happens every now and again. But, man, Dan must have been really fucking paranoid for them to get rid of him over Susie.
I truly would have loved to see him in the individual portion of the game. I think he just would have been so all over the place.
He would have been a disaster, and I would have loved it.
Throw him in with a few of these other people who are wild cards. Bonkers, man. All of it.
Him and Sugar with the weirdest alliance you've ever seen.
Corinne says he's socially inept in a lot of ways. This is where Corinne is trying too hard to be the bad guy.
Yeah, I don't like her. I like, it. What you just said, it feels like she's just trying to be mean, like, to get attention on camera rather than, like, because being sassy and snide is something that is, like, who she is.
Yeah. I don't know if he's a former fatty. These are her words.
I hated that so much.
Or why he wasn't liked as a child, but he's always seeking approval. And, like,
fuck off.
It didn't need to be said.
No.
Like,
and it's fake.
It's so fake. I don't know. I can't imagine this is how she goes through her regular life.
No. It's so obviously and, like, blandly performative.
Yeah. And then on the flip side, Marcus saying, there's nothing I can do to save Dan from himself.
Like, yeah.
I can't.
Marcus likes him. I think Marcus must have had some type of deal with him, because Marcus doesn't vote for him.
Mm.
He votes for Susie, even though the rest of the alliance votes for Dan.
No, I think they split the vote to avoid any idol.
Oh, okay. That could be it.
I think it was a 4-3 vote.
Okay, gotcha.
Anyway, reward challenge. We are playing keep away with a breakable ball.
I want to mention one other thing, Marcus ending the conversation with, do you feel heard? I was like, that's a man who's been to therapy.
Good.
Or is a therapist.
There's maybe that. We're playing keep away with a breakable ball, and you have three people in a court with obstacles, and one person from the other tribe is trying to get you to either drop the ball or break it themselves. And the winning tribe gets picked up by a helicopter to go have a picnic on a cliffside.
They gave them spices for another challenge. Just like, plant spices.
Yeah.
This is a helicopter trip to a cliffside picnic where they will also secretly get letters from home.
Yes.
Yep.
We're stepping up the rewards.
Not all rewards are created equal.
No. Charlie and Corinne sit this one out. Randy and Ace are the attackers for the first round. I'm just going to go through who attacks.
It's the same thing as every fucking challenge.
Yeah.
I will say the challenge itself, I think it's a kind of a cool idea.
I do too. I like this.
I think the ropes might have been a bad idea. I don't know. Like, Bob eats shit pretty hard.
Bob does eat shit pretty hard.
And, like, that's sort of, I think, the natural conclusion of setting up the arena this way.
Well, no one told Bob to go over the ropes.
But you're going to do what you got to do to get that ball.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe one that we play on sand. My only note.
It's fair. But then if the ball drops, it might not break as nicely.
Well, it might just need to be, like, if it hits the ground then. Like,
sure.
You're out. Yeah.
Makes sense. Anyway, Randy and Ace are the first attackers. Randy straight up tackles Ken.
Yeah.
It's It's a good tackle. Good form tackle.
This is the other problem possibly with the challenge. Like, you just get somebody that's going to take people out.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way to get the ball, I guess.
It's one way to get the ball. Or if nothing else, make it harder for them to pass the ball. Because yeah. If you're injured, you don't want to play that game too often.
And Randy is the kind of guy who would injure you to win a challenge, I think.
Yeah, you might be right. Anyway, Randy wins that one for Coda. Bob and Sugar are the second attackers, and Sugar's not good at this.
No. Sugar is... I think the word that comes to mind is pathetic.
Yeah. And even pre this round, Randy's making grunts at her. And she's like, this guy is so... Such an ugly person. He's just mean.
What is the grunts about?
He's trying to intimidate her, I think.
Yeah.
Or he's just fucking around because he knows that they're going to win.
I'm now growing tired of Randy.
Oh, that turned fast.
Well, like, I don't know. His sassiness is interesting, but he just goes below the belt sometimes in ways that, like, it's bad for his game and not fun to watch. So... Although next episode, apparently he's the king of Africa and they're on the coast. So we'll see what's going on there.
I think very much like Corinne, Randy does this thing where he is like, he's just himself. But then these mean things, I think production is latching on to. They're like, oh, that was great for the camera. I'm assuming they're telling him this. And so he does more and more and more until it just becomes... all of him.
Yeah, but it feels like Randy just needed somebody to give him permission to be that person, and Corinne is, like, reading a script.
Yes.
Like, it is still natural to Randy.
That's fair. Oh, anyway, Sugar can't do anything, and despite Bob floundering all over that court, he gets them to drop it. Or they hit, like, one of the posts or something.
Yeah, it hits a post.
Yeah. So that one's not great. And then we move on to Dan and Maddie. And, oh, this one is the errant one that hits a post, but still.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Maddie, was your best chance. I don't know if it was a random draw or why you had Sugar go this early.
Well, if you needed her to compete at all, I think you want her to be an attacker rather than a catcher or thrower.
I guess.
Like, there's no good spot for her. She's not good at challenges.
No, not good at this kind of challenge.
No.
She does a good job in the log roll.
True.
So, anyway, Coda wins 3-0.
Woof, man. Just woof.
It's rough. And then send Sugar to exile once again.
Yeah.
5 times in a row. Even Jeff's like, this is unprecedented, and I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know what we're going to do about this for the future. I have to say, I spent some of the early episode dogging on this season, and it's all well-deserved. But I do want these seasons to exist, because production trying to save it mid-season is so much worse for the overall health of Survivor. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're just going to have a bad season.
Yep.
I'd rather watch a bad season that I know is like has less producer involvement than one that feels like they were constantly trying to tinker with it to make it better.
Sure. Maddie gets real frustrated that Sugar's completely useless when it comes to challenges, and I would really, really, really desire her to go.
Sure. You're not going to get your wish, Maddie. How did we end up in a place where Maddie and Ace became the pair, but Ace lost Sugar? Like, it's such a bizarre set of, like, circumstances.
Weirdly, I think it's exactly because of that. I think the loyalty to Sugar was lost because he then presented this loyalty to Maddie.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe Sugar sniffed that out, you think?
Sugar was no longer the number one. Maddie was the number one, and Sugar was the side piece.
That's fair, yeah. And Ace, like, I don't know, maybe Ace was good at hiding it, maybe he wasn't. Maybe Ken's manipulation was really, really strong. Or maybe Sugar's just smart.
Could be.
Like, maybe she sniffed that out, like, on her own and was like, oh, this isn't good for me. And also being tied to this guy isn't good for me.
And she kind of says it out, like, outright says it that...
Yeah.
Ace is a snake. I know he's a snake. So if I sense even like a bit of shenanigans going on, I'm cool cutting him.
Everyone in this game underestimates her still.
Yeah.
Although I don't even know how to estimate her. Even, she's just kind of doing shit.
Even Ace.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about why I think that's the case later in the episode. So then we go on this reward. It's beautiful. They... hang out on this cliff, and I don't know who said it, but thank you for telling the people don't go right up on the cliff edge.
And they still did.
They still did. A few of them did.
A few of them did. It was either Dan or Marcus. It was only the back of their head I saw. But mm-hmm. yeah, like right on the fucking edge. That soil's loose.
If anything's going to fall, it's right there.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Don't do that. And then they're having a great time. They're eating their picnic. And then someone comes up and presents them with their letters from home. And Bob is in hysterics.
Yeah, Bob has Bob crashes out as well, but like positive.
it's a good crash out, yes. I swear. And they, it's just so nice.
Did Randy not have any?
I thought he did.
Everyone else was reading theirs and Randy didn't have anything, which might have just been like he set them down to read them when he was done eating or something like that, but I couldn't tell.
I would venture to say that Randy is not the sentimental type.
Fair. I also wonder if, like, or I also think that if he didn't have any letters from home, they would have probably made a story of that.
Fair. Yeah, that's exactly. They would very clearly tell us that, sorry, nobody from home loved you enough to send you a letter.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, anyway. Back at Fong, Maddie is... He's still frustrated. I don't think in my entire 29 years of living have I ever been so embarrassed. My spirits are dropping. Sugar was useless. I hate it. And I'm starting to get pissed. Ace, let's go on a boat ride.
Yeah, not suspicious at all that you go into that rant and then go, hey, let's the two of us go off and talk. I want to mention one thing that you missed from the previous scene.
Mm-hmm.
Randy says this is like something along the lines of like, the only thing better than us having this is that they don't.
Yeah.
Which is just, dude, they're already dead. They're already dead. This isn't a contentious split. This is a massacre, and you are just piling on.
He said the sentiment before, but it's still...
But it gets worse every episode because you just keep beating them into the dirt.
Mm-hmm. It truly is okay showing a little bit of mercy, my friend.
Yeah. Anyway, Ace and Maddie go on their boat ride.
They go on a boat ride, the riverboat of love. Anyway, Maddie says, we have to vote Sugar. We have to get rid of her. You don't need her. It's 3-2.
He's jealous of the mistress.
You're in the clear. It's you and I to the merge, 100%. We're aligned. Make me feel comfortable, says Maddie.
Okay.
And so what Ace does here is said, no. That would be stupid of us. We have the idol in our possession. That's the key word there, is it's us. Like, if we include Sugar, it's us. I am ringleading Sugar here.
Mm-hmm.
And don't you see the logic in that? Crystal has to be our next move.
It's, yeah, this 2v2 split is so interesting that puts Sugar in the middle. And we don't see any attempt of Maddie to bring Sugar in at all. Like, they leave Ace as this sort of hinge point
mm-hmm.
that I think breeds the paranoia that makes Sugar vote him off. When, like, if Maddie and Sugar just had a conversation, this probably goes differently.
Probably, but I think he's too pissed at Sugar for not being a very good challenge person that he...
That will help you in, like, 3 days. That will be to your benefit in, like, 3 fucking calendar days.
Yeah. Yeah. Assuming you're talking about merge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they merge next episode.
You think they merge next episode? Yeah. That's fair. They do show everyone on the same area.
It's possible they don't, but even then, you're getting rid of one more person. Yeah. Like, okay, you get rid of Crystal, or you get rid of Ken, I guess, if you're Maddie, and, like, there you go.
Sure. Anyway, they end that with, Crystal's our next move, and then jump cut to Crystal on shore watching them. Those assholes are talking about me. I know it. And Ken kind of has to talk her down. Trust me, we have to blindside Ace. I'll talk to Sugar. We're gonna get this to work. It's pretty good.
I'm so excited to talk about his conversation with Crystal because it's with Sugar. It's subtle, but it's one of the better lies and manipulations I can remember.
Mm-hmm. This is where the letters from home actually comes in, but I just wanted to say that it's right here. It's so wholesome. Bob kisses his letter. These are the people closest to my heart.
He's like, such a good man.
I love these people that I'm on a tribe with, but these people in the letter, much more important to me. Life doesn't get better than this.
They also had a lot of letters.
A lot of letters.
Which is not something I usually notice, but like I feel like in the past about like one or two, this time it's like, here's your 17 letters.
Here's your uncle. Here's your cousin that you've never spoken to before. Here's your students from high school 20 years ago.
They didn't even know you were on Survivor.
Yeah, we wrote to them and they're like, oh, okay, sure. Send them a letter, I guess.
Sure, why not?
Dear Bob, why'd you give me a B in your class, asshole? Anyway, we flip to Exile and Sugar is having this crisis where I don't know what's happening in this game. I'm always here. I don't get to play the game. Thank God for Ace.
I don't understand her. I respect her. Mm-hmm. And I think she's doing... I think when she gets to her conclusion, she's doing a good job. But I cannot follow her work. If you are going to blindside Ace eventually and you think he's a snake and you've said all that to us in confessionals and you did ended up doing it, why the fuck did you ever hand him the idol? Because then when you don't later, it's suspicious as hell. And he can't, we're at a point in the game where he doesn't manage to do anything with that.
But he can't. By the rules of the game, he can't.
Well, no, I mean like sway numbers. Oh, like, sure. He's just stuck. Mm-hmm. But like, if this was earlier that you had made this decision, or if this was post-merge, like, this could be a big fucking problem.
Uh-huh.
I guess I will say, to Sugar's credit, she is working off of incredibly limited information. She is a guest on that tribe.
Yes.
She is not a permanent resident.
The guest artist, Sugar.
Yeah, she comes in to make votes and then goes back to exile.
Unfortunately, you are correct. Play a challenge, go to exile, go vote.
She is, what are we on, like, days 17?
Maybe something like that.
Well, if she's been to exile 5 times and it's an average of 1 to 2 days for exile, mm-hmm. that means she has spent 5 to 10 days on exile, which could be more than half of the game, depending on how many times it was 1 day, how many times it was 2 days. That's absurd.
She has played half the amount of game that everyone else has.
Yeah, and flip-flopped more than anybody else.
Fair. Yeah, she talks a little bit here about how she's using Ace, but he's using her. We're using each other. And my tribe thinks I'm sticking it out with Ace because I'm stupid. I'm sticking out with him because he's the strongest player.
I guess, how do you define strength on Survivor?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he is, by all means, a good player. Yes. He is athletic. He is social, like he's good at bringing people in, clearly.
The problem is you don't trust him from the first conversation.
That is a problem. We jump to the immunity challenge. And here's the kicker. Both tribes are going to tribal council tonight, and you're playing for individual immunity.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I think this was fun. I think the log roll was a fun challenge to do.
Yes.
Because it is not contingent on athleticism.
It's a different kind of athleticism.
Yeah, it's not strength-based like we've seen in other times. It's dexterity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Balance.
And so we're drawing random people for you to go against. It's essentially just a tournament. You compete until we have one person left standing. And there's a twist at the end, says Jeff.
Yeah.
It's in this note that I hold here in my hand.
That's fine.
Yeah. First round, Dan versus Ace. Ace wins. Charlie versus Crystal. Charlie wins. Marcus versus Maddie. Marcus wins. Randy versus Susie. Susie wins.
Barely.
Kenny versus Sugar. Sugar wins.
I love that Kenny versus Sugar, it took them so much effort just to get the log to roll.
It's not built for tiny people in mind.
No.
No. Because once you get off center, that's when your weight starts to move the log. But if you don't have a lot of weight to move the log, it's...
It's like Courtney in China just winning by sitting on the thing that it could never tilt.
This is which Newton law of motion? Object in motion stays in motion?
Object at rest stays at rest.
Exactly. They don't have a lot of inertia to move this damn log.
It's funny.
And then Bob versus Corinne. Bob lets Jeff know, I won a lumberjack log roll in college.
Bob has weird lore. You just know that Bob has weird lore.
I feel like I will become Bob as I grow older. Bob has done many, many things and has these random hobbies that I'm like, hell yeah, Bob. Go off, King.
I'll be Chaos Bob. I'll be Evil Bob.
Bob wins this with a backflip at the end.
It's really cool.
It's pretty cool. Round two, Charlie versus Ace.
Oh, I do want to say Bob with his shirt off, like, that... His body is struggling. Like, I know that they're the more well-fed tribe, but I was like, ooh, that is an older gentleman that has been left in Gabon for 17 days, and it shows.
Thin people show worse. Like, it you can clearly see that they're struggling.
Yeah.
But thin old people, it's doubling down on that one.
Yeah.
With this Charlie versus Ace scene, I was so distracted by Maddie just kind of lounging in the background.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Because they have the contestants who are still in sit on the floating platform with Jeff. The contestants that are eliminated are on the bank. So there's this side angle shot of Charlie versus Ace, but then on the bank behind him, Maddie's just like on his stomach, kind of like kicking his feet. It's really funny.
This is a season of freaks.
Yeah. Ace barely wins this one. Marcus versus Randy, Marcus wins. And Sugar versus Bob, Sugar barely beats out Bob. By a hair.
This is another one where, boy, that log took some effort to roll.
Uh-huh. So then we have three people left at the end. And I went, okay, how do you do this?
Poorly.
They put all three of them on the log together, which I see no problem with. This is...
Well, kind of.
Okay.
So, and you could argue this is partly bad strategy on Ace's part. Obviously, they just pick for it and whatever ends up, he ends up in the middle. Then Sugar falls off and he has Marcus behind him, which means he doesn't know which way Marcus is going to be moving. In order to, like, anticipate it and, like, try not to fall off. And I think if he's facing Marcus, he probably wins this.
I 100% blame Ace on this one.
Well, but here's the thing. No matter what, he's going to have his back to somebody.
I would rather have my back to Sugar, the one who does not weigh very much and can't move this log a whole lot on her own.
It's a good point. But you're taking a guess on which one of them you think is going to do better. But and he chose poorly.
Even still, Sugar is in your corner. If one of you wins, theoretically both of you win.
Well, is she?
Well, okay. At this point, he has to assume.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think he just absolutely screwed that up.
I don't know if he got to decide like which side he was coming from. Turning around on the log is difficult.
Right, but they held it in place.
But they held it in place. So, yeah, I think he probably just didn't think that much about it.
I think it was a mental blunder until they started, and then, oh, no, I should have been the other way.
Yeah.
Oopsies. So, like I said, Sugar goes out first, and...
But I still think this is like a really hard spot to be in to have to make that choice about something that isn't about the log roll game.
Yeah. And even still, like you said, him being able to see Marcus would have changed that.
Yeah.
Because they're both kind of going down and Marcus does a high jump to avoid going into the water, whereas Ace has no idea where Marcus is. If he sees that Marcus is also going down, then you kind of maneuver a little bit. I don't think it would have saved him entirely, but... Him being able to see what he's doing with his legs definitely would have helped.
It could have kept him in this game.
Yep. So, Marcus wins, and the twist is he also gets to assign an individual idol to someone from the other tribe.
I thought he was going to pick Ace, just like, oh, the person who he did came the best. In second.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nope, he picked Sugar.
Which, I was like, okay, like... I don't understand. Marcus tells us why he picked Sugar. I still don't understand why Marcus picked Sugar. I thought it was like, we keep sending you to exile, so here we feel bad. But his confessional reason to us doesn't make any sense. Like, you want to flush the idol, but if you, like, or you want to know where it is, but why do you care if you know where it is? If you don't give her immunity, she might have to use it. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you rather she use it and be back in play than... No, protecting the person who has it that isn't on your side.
I think this in tandem with voting out Dan does make sense to me. Because then he at least knows if Dan doesn't have it and doesn't use it because he only went once and he knows he's in trouble, this is the opportunity for him to use it. If he doesn't use it, therefore Sugar has it.
Yeah, I guess it's just the odds of Sugar having it are so high.
Yes.
You know. Like, there's only been, like, Ozzy just basically saying that he has the idol is the only time I can think of. And, like, well, I guess except for the super idols, because people wanted people to know they had the super idols, mm-hmm. Like back in Panama. But it's why protect the person against you that has the idol? You want the, and if you get rid of her, I guess she can give it to anybody anyways. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
I see the logic.
I feel like Charlie with the fucking red string on the board being like, this doesn't make any sense.
So then we do what Survivor has never really done before. We split up into two timelines. We have the Fong timeline. We have the Coda timeline.
We're doing the Survivor multiverse now.
Yeah. So Fong, we do everything. We do their confessionals. We do their camp life. And then we go to tribal.
Do you like this better than doing both camps and then both tribals?
No.
I don't either.
No, I think it makes it, like, yes, it tells a better through-line narrative, but then it also gets a little, I mean, timeline confusing, because you're doing an entire day, and then you're going back, and then you're showing this other timeline. It also breaks up some of the monotony and breaks up, like, oh, this is a slam dunk, this person's going home. This is a slam dunk, this person's going home. If we do this confessional, that confessional, this confessional.
Yes, if you interweave the stories, it's more interesting when we get to the tribals rather than being like, right. Oh, we've now laid out who's going home, and they went home. Oh, we've now laid out who's going home, and they went home.
This is not something that Survivor does very often.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I'm glad they tried it.
Yeah.
But I don't like it.
Give it a shot. At Fong, Ken he's saying it all depends on the pinup girl, Sugar. My life and Crystal's life are in the balance here.
And do you think Kenny wants to be aligned with Crystal, or is this just
he has to be?
Okay.
I think he likes Crystal.
I think Crystal's becoming difficult.
But he's been aligned with her from the start.
True.
He could have jumped ship at any point here.
That's a good point.
And they're kind of ride or die here.
Yeah, fair enough. This conversation is masterful by Ken.
It's
and subtle.
Brilliant.
And on a level that it's been a while since we've seen. Like, we've seen, obviously, Micronesia was full of really good lies and blindsides and things like that. But this is a masterclass in how to do it with, like, subtlety. He tells a lie. So basically tells Sugar, hey, you know, when you're at Exile, like, Ace is running around saying that he has you in his pocket, that he has the idol because you have the idol, and that he's just using you, and that he actually, you know, he's going to ask you for the idol or whatever. The reason this is so brilliant is because it's all so believable and unverifiable. So it's not something that she can go back to Ace and say, did you say all of this? And Ace can prove that he didn't, mm-hmm. because how can you prove a negative? And whether he would have done this for anybody, I don't know. But for Ace specifically, it's a great lie, because everyone knows that Ace's weakness is that you cannot trust him.
Correct.
That he is self-serving. So he plays on Ace's biggest vulnerability with an unverifiable lie that is rooted in truth. It is awesome.
It's all really good. And Sugar says, I'm not sure if I trust Ken, but I've been trusting the biggest snake this whole game. So what am I going to do there? So then Ace comes up and he asks Sugar, hey, I need to borrow the idol. I need it. I am feeling kind of in danger here.
Credit where credit's due. Great instincts, mm-hmm. that you feel like you're in danger right now.
And Sugar says, why? We have the majority. You shouldn't need this, oh, Mr. Ace. Well, they could still do a double cross. Maddie, I'm assuming he's hinting at Maddie could do a double cross here.
I think he thinks Sugar's more likely to betray him than Maddie.
Yes.
But he can't say you could do a double cross.
Correct.
So it has to be Maddie. That's the only person left.
They're needling each other at this point.
Yep.
He's saying,
it's a dance.
Yeah. I think I'm in danger. She's saying, no, you're not.
Well, I would never betray you. So why do you need the idol? Mm-hmm. Well, in case Maddie betrays me.
Yeah. So Sugar has to put on the acting skills. No, that's not happening. There's no way. Maddie's with you. And he says, "Why? So you're willing to risk my neck on this one? I gave it to you. I gave the idol back to you last time. Why can't this just be the same?"
Good counter move.
Mm-hmm. This is kind of a brilliant conversation.
Yeah.
All around, I loved it. Oh, Ace, I'll have to think about it.
Which is a no.
It's brilliant. Great. This is really good.
This is her basically saying you're going home.
Yeah. Tribal council. And
and the credit I want to give Ace of knowing when he's in danger, like, obviously there's five people left and he's a target, like, duh, is could be what you're thinking at home. But we've seen people that would, if they had the idol in their possession, still would have tried to hold it through this vote because they're like, well, I did my vote counting, I have three.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, I need that idol to play it tonight because I think I'm fucked.
Yes.
And he's right.
And he's correct. Yeah. At Tribal Council, there's a really long shot of a snake for a while. I'm like,
there's a lot of them.
There's a lot of snakes.
Yeah.
Sneaky snake. We talk about the rice spilling for a long time. Maddie and Crystal just talk over each other for a long period. I couldn't take notes because I'm like, I don't know what anyone's saying at this point. They're just mad. They're angry. Ace says the anger that we felt toward her, that she thinks we're feeling toward her, was in her head. And Crystal goes, so I'm delusional now. I'm like, whoa.
So you gotta chill out.
Whoa. Yikes. And we can...
And again, I don't even think Ace was mad. Like, maybe Maddie was, but, like, I think Ace was just, like... Like, again, a little bit of frustration, but, like, I thought he handled it really well and really gracefully, even if he's kind of a snake. Like, I don't know.
We retread this earlier section in the episode. It's just shot for shot doing the same thing.
Right.
Because then Ace goes, I asked you three times to come and eat the rice. Like, we want you to eat. And Crystal says, this I don't like.
No.
If you cared enough, you would have saved me some anyways.
No.
It's like the toxic girlfriend. It's like
100%.
No, I don't want anything. I don't want anything. Why didn't you give me anything?
Yeah, why did you listen to me?
How dare you?
And I get that sometimes people like want you to do something for them without like even if they aren't necessarily asking for it. But if you deny it six times, Crystal, I'm not going to leave the food to spoil.
Thou hast denied me three times, and on the third time, you stabbed.
On the third time eating that fucking rice.
Yeah. Anyway, Sugar is just sitting there, and Jeff's like, wow, Sugar, you're blown away by all this. And she says, this is all petty bullcrap to me. We need to get past this.
She's right. She's also the Mario Party meme of, like, Luigi standing on the ball and everyone else just falling off.
Sugar wins by doing nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I mean, she did something. Not in this tribal council, but her big move is not giving Ace the idol.
Sure. Yeah. Sometimes your big move is what you don't do.
Yeah. So, Ace is voted off in a 3-2 line. I still love the Ace hole vote.
What that is? Because the other word was blurred out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I didn't realize that was from Sugar.
That was from Sugar?
I thought it was from Crystal.
Ah, I was writing notes and I also thought it was from Crystal. Hilarious.
So funny.
God, she really did not like him. Sugar to Ace.
It's so confusing because the timeline feels...
It really is Joker and Harley Quinn.
They're like best friends. Oh, I'm skeptical of each other. Oh, I'm going to call him Acehole.
Maybe we need to give her more credit, and she was just always using him.
I think it's a little bit of that. I also think maybe Acehole was a term of endearment.
Oh.
Like, maybe that was an internal nickname.
Maybe. Yeah,
because he knows it was her that voted him out right away.
Does he?
Yes.
Okay.
Because he says something along...
He says, thanks, Sugar, but I thought that had to do with the idol.
No, he's being facetious.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Sugar. How do you think Ace does in Future Survivor?
He has, just by his very being, one of the worst threat managements possible. You hear him talk for a second, and you're like, that guy would sell me for a Klondike bar. So, like, he's so min-maxed in a bad way. Like, he is charismatic. He can get people to work with him. He can get people, like, he can win challenges. He is a good Survivor player, but he has this, it's his Achilles heel, but his whole body's a foot. It's just the largest target I can think of. Now, on a season of people that are like, they're like, well, I know I can't trust him, and therefore I can trust him. Like, I will trust that he will always be self-serving, and I can work with that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he has a path. But I think that he's, if his tribe does really well in challenges and they have enough people that are good at the challenges, he could be like a second, third boot because you know he's going to be dangerous. Otherwise, he's probably typically right in this range of like the try to get rid of him right before the merge so you don't lose any more, so you don't lose more challenges than you need to. But you cannot let him get to the merge. He's a Bond villain.
Can I do a hot take?
Sure.
I think had he not had the inconsistent dialect.
Yeah, the fake accent.
He'd go further in this game.
Oh, one, I don't even think that's a hot take. I think that's just a normal take. I agree.
I think he could have been a very good competitor had he not been British.
And if agreed. And like evilly British. He has the evil British dialect. He doesn't sound like he's on Bake Off. Like, what are we doing? Even if that is somehow his real accent, which I doubt, but if it is, like, you need to learn an American one before you get on the show.
I think it is his real accent. I think he's just...
I can't tell how much I actually think it's fake and how much this is a bit. I'll be honest with you.
Okay, well, he's not coming back. He is... this is his one and only run.
And he could have been on villains.
He could have been on villains.
Which is funny, because his actions... If you just take his actions, he's actually kind of a hero. Like, he didn't do anything villainous. He kept his word every step of the way. But he talks, like, even just, like, outside of, like, his dialect. Like, his word choice is, like, I'm in the supremacy position. Mm. Like, he just sounds like a villain.
Here's the thing, too. He was cast for villains. I think he was an alternate.
Oh, an alternate, yeah.
Alternate. But it's weird, because it says that he was cast for Heroes vs. Villains, but was allegedly cut 3 days before filming. Part of me goes, okay, you're an alternate, but that's a weird way to phrase it. Part of me goes, did they just change their mind? Did they overcast hoping someone was going to drop out?
And that's a 10 versus 10 season, right?
I think so.
Yeah, so it's not like they were like, oh, we were going to do 20, and then we went down to 18. So, yeah, huh.
I don't know.
Weird.
So, yeah.
Maybe somebody will write in about that, I'm sure, if there is information to be found.
Give us the deets. Anyway, we then go...
Did they find out his dialect was fake? We're like, no.
No, can't do it. We then go back in time, and we're going to do it all again on the Coda side. Dan asked Marcus straight up, I'm not going, am I? No, Susie's going to go. It's going to be him. We're getting rid of him.
Although it is really close to Susie.
It is close, because Randy has established himself as the new Bob in the Onion Alliance. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know what? Susie's a vulnerability. Bob is annoying, but I see him being as loyal as the day is long here.
Is Bob annoying? Do other people think that, or is that just Randy?
I think that's just Randy.
Probably.
He might do things that other people find quirky. I don't think he's annoying. And Charlie says to us, you know what? Dan better cross his fingers that Susie will blow up and do some crazy stuff, because he's going.
And then...
Cue the crazy stuff.
Cue the crazy stuff. See, this would have been so much better if we would have gotten that scene, then gone back to Fong, and then come back to Susie being crazy.
I agree. Well, there's something to be said about the... Wow, she's got to do something real stupid. Cue stupid thing.
Fair.
Like, that's pretty fun.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's heavy-handed, but it's fun. Corinne goes up to Susie and says, you know what? I'm not writing your name down. I don't think you're going to flip on us when we get to individual portion. So I think you're great. And Susie goes, you know what? Thank you. I figured someone would eventually tell me the plan.
And that's the end of the conversation. Yeah. Susie, stop talking.
But I got to be honest with you.
No, you don't.
I was going to write your name down.
Why would you say that? She didn't ask. She didn't even ask who you were going to vote for. You shouldn't have even had your mind made up necessarily yet. What?
Unprompted says, I'm going to vote. I was planning on voting you out.
Why?
Well, you know, I'm a hard worker and...
Implying that you're not, by the way. Like, Corinne is funny for being like, why were you going to do that?
Yeah.
You want to give me a little more insight to keep sticking that foot in your mouth? And before that, like in the conversation with Susie, Corinne's like, hey, you know, we really like you. And maybe that's a lie. I don't know. But it's like, you know, you're probably because she's a hard worker on camp and all this stuff. And then
I think it's to keep her satiated and not like, fair. Hey, you're one of us. I don't want you to feel
one. Yeah. Yeah. But then immediately the confessional is like, I fucking hate this woman.
This idiot. Yeah. This moron decided, I have to go. I hate her, hate her, hate her, hate her. Boy. And then go back to Randy. Randy's like, I told you guys, she's nuts.
Maybe Randy was onto something.
Susie's game is no game. The problem there is that she can be bought really easily.
What? Yeah. No, I don't know anything about Susie, but I think he's right, at least that her game is no game. What the fuck was that conversation? How? What are you doing?
She's just living her life, man.
Oh, my God.
So Corinne runs to Charlie and Marcus, and I didn't realize she was Loco Macabeza. I didn't look this up. I think it's crazy in the head.
I think so, yeah.
And
Loco's crazy, so.
Yeah. I think Cabeza's
it, head. It could be, like, crazy in the membrane, or, like, you know, because that's
insane
the,
in the membrane.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Marcus says, thank God we have a two-person advantage, because this throws a big wrench in our plans. But Dan might have the immunity idol, and that scares me. So who is the least risky person to vote out here?
Huh?
Hanging Chad moment. Jump to Tribal. Tribal says...
That's not what that means.
I know what it means, but... I was doing wordplay, you see.
Fair. Hanging Dan.
Hanging Dan. No, I don't like that either.
I don't like that either.
We're at Tribal, and Jeff is asking Susie, well, people think you're the weakest. Are you the weakest? Who's weaker than you? Susie, I don't know. This is a moment that I'm like, Jeff, you're doing too much.
Agreed.
Because Susie answers, and Susie doesn't have to answer, and that is part of the problem. She goes, I think I have pretty... I am kind of weak, but I think I have better upper body strength than Corinne does.
What? How are you doubling down on this mistake? You've had several hours to think about this. And I know that Susie's not a deaf player, and I also know there's, you know, listen, I say dumb shit all the time. But just say, I think we all have individual strengths. I think strength mm-hmm. can be measured in a number of different ways. Whatever, pull a Yule. Don't say that, don't double down.
She can't lawyer this. She's not good at it. And Corinne goes... Okay, I don't mean to insult Susie. And Jeff goes, she just insulted you!
Shut up, Jeff.
Shut up, Jeff, you're being too much. And that's why I'm disagreeing. Thank you, Jeff.
Corinne handles it well.
Yeah. Randy says, we should operate without a filter more. Everyone should
I don't agree.
Everyone should blow up so then I know who you are. Oh, no, sorry, that was Corinne. Corinne says that.
Oh, okay.
And Randy says, hey... You know what? You're right. It's good and bad, though. Good, I don't have to pretend to people and people know where I stand. And Jeff's like, well, what's the bad? I don't have to pretend to people and people know where I stand.
It's pretty funny.
It's a great scene. Yeah, and then Corinne kind of hangs it with, I don't know if I am making a big mistake, but I think we're going to do what we're going to do. And then we vote. They split their votes. It's a 4-3. Dan's going home.
He's a weird dude.
He is a weird dude. I kind of like him, though.
Me too. I wish we'd gotten more of him.
How do you think Dan does in Future Survivor?
It's funny that this comes in the same episode as Ace, because I just mentioned having one large Achilles heel, and Dan also has one large Achilles heel, which is the paranoia. I think it usually takes him farther in the game, but it is... I mean... He is a unique player in that it is rare for people to get voted out almost exclusively because they are paranoid. With that in mind, yeah, I mean, he's a monster in the challenges.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I think that he's probably always going to make the merge, or maybe like right, like in this case, like he makes the merge if it's not for a double vote, even on a tribe where he didn't have the numbers because of a tribe swap and because he's a freak. But... Yeah, so I think that he's probably more of like the Rupert track in terms of when he goes home. Like, he's somebody you're targeting those first three votes after the merge. That's his role to fill.
So
and I don't think he'd make it much farther because I think he has a hard time making alliances. It is really, really hard and exhausting to be in a close alliance with somebody that is paranoid as Dan is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It would make it very difficult for the... The audience perspective, I would have liked him to go further in the game.
100%.
It would have been fun watching him scramble in an individual game.
Oh, he would have been a mess. Dude crashed out from, like, moment one of the show, like, dumping his bag all over in Tribal to prove to people that they could trust him. And that was, like, that was day three. He was a paranoid mess on day three, Steven.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Dan does not come back. And I have sad news. Dan died unexpectedly in 2016.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know the cause of death. They didn't release cause of death. It's probably out there somewhere.
Sure.
But
there's no need to dig for it.
Exactly. When the funeral home declined to comment on what, like, that's fine. I'm going to leave it there.
Okay. That's too bad.
It's very sad. He was only 40.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's tragic.
Yeah. Hate to see that. Light a candle for Dan.
Bummer. Like,
I stand Dan.
Yeah. He was fun.
He was fun. Your protagonist of the episode.
I think it's Sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's Sugar.
I think that's fair.
I mean, literally, at the title of the episode, it's all to the pinup girl. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Then that's it. Bumper. That'll do it for this episode of the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast. Jared, anything you'd like to promote?
I just want to promote this cool quote I heard that has to do with greed, especially in capitalism, which is, growth for growth's sake is the ideology of a cancer cell.
Mm.
I was like, oh, that slaps.
Interesting.
Yeah. What about you, Steven?
I'm going to promote. I don't know what I'm going to promote. We'll do it something silly. when you put on makeup, take it off after the day. I didn't do that.
Do you still have it on?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
See, I don't... For anyone who cares, I don't wear makeup very often. I usually use it when I'm performing, like I did yesterday, to just like cover up. I get really red in the face, you see.
Yes.
So just to naturalize the skin tones.
Okay.
That's it. But you're supposed to take your makeup off at the end of the day.
Yeah, I can cause a breakout.
Yeah. And I was so tired, I just went straight to bed.
I stay up till like 2 a.m.
Why would you do that?
Because I'm a crazy person.
That's fair. You're also not going back today, so.
True.
You didn't have to recover.
No. Yeah, you got to rally.
I got to rally. Got to go shower, put my costume on. Let's do it.
What's your costume today?
We're doing a deep cut. It's, did you ever watch Digimon?
Yeah, a little bit.
How far did you watch into Digimon?
Not that far.
Exactly. This is from like the 4th season of Digimon. One of the main characters there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I think Takuya from Digimon.
Sure.
Digimon Frontiers.
Okay.
No one is going to know what this is.
No, but they'll see the Digivice.
Yeah. It'll be cool. For my co-host, Jared, this is Steven.
For my host, Steven, this is Jared.
Oh, I want some ice cream.
Go get ice cream.
I will.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.